Hi, I'm Chris Ippolito, and welcome to the Get Coached podcast, where I'm documenting my journey from employee to entrepreneur while featuring the coaches that are helping me along the way. Each episode, these coaches provide actionable advice to help me and you, the audience, find more success as entrepreneurs. I invite you to join the journey so we can go and grow together. Welcome to another episode of the Get Coach podcast. In this episode, I sat down with Dan Krikorian, who is a college-level associate basketball coach, a touring musician, fellow podcaster, and professor of leadership. Dan and I talked about the importance of leadership and how to learn to be more resilient. We also chat about how he manages being involved in so many things. Please enjoy this conversation with Dan Krikorian. Hi, Dan.
Chris, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And I'm glad to have you on the Get Coach podcast, and welcome. A little bit of a different conversation. As you know, I have normally business coaches or like professional coaches, but with a business slant. You're a little bit unique in that you are, in a sense, like a professional coach. But there was something else that really appealed to me when we first talked. And I'd love if you could share your story, and I'm sure you'll mention what it is that you do. And I'm pretty sure the audience will pick up on why I invited you to be on the show.
Sure. Well, thanks once again for having me. I'm really excited to have this conversation with you, and really enjoy what you're doing with the podcast. And so hoping to just add to the other great folks that you've had on. So as far as my story and kind of how I end up getting here with you, As we'll talk about, I kind of have multiple prongs of my career and multiple avenues that I coach in or that I'm involved in. But I am a professor at Chapman University in the leadership department at Chapman. And I am also the associate head men's basketball coach at Chapman University. So my day-to-day is coaching at the collegiate level college basketball, and then as of 5 years ago I started teaching leadership as well in that leadership minor. We'll get into other things that I do. I'm also I tour the world as a musician, and I'm a podcaster as well, all kind of rolled up into one.
Awesome. Yeah, and it was when you had mentioned that you were a professor of leadership that really caught my attention, because I don't even remember if I've mentioned this on the show, but I went through, it was pretty much all of 2018, where the vast majority of the books that I read were on the subject of leadership. So I took a lot of value out of that for personal purposes, for business purposes. So to learn that that's even a thing, that somebody is teaching leadership at colleges, I thought that was really interesting and unique, and I just wanted to kind of get a little bit of I guess, like, what is that experience like, and how did you get there, and like, what made you want to do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So being full-time on campus at Chapman 5-6 years ago now, Chapman has a master's of leadership as well. So you can get your master's in leadership development. And I took that, and that's what I got my master's in. And the capstone class project that I had to do, you had to basically create a project or something for your capstone for the master's program. I created a course, what would be a potential college course that you could teach on. Specifically, my course was on resilience, and resilience looking at athletes, looking at people in all different parts of life, and how you can become and how you can learn to be resilient. One of the professors in the master's program also is involved in the undergraduate program at Chapman, and just really enjoyed my presentation. Him and I had a good relationship. And so after I had finished my master's, talked to me about bringing me into the faculty at the undergraduate level. And so it was a great opportunity. And I actually wrote, so I teach two courses at Chapman, and I actually wrote both of those courses and teach both of them. And they both have to do with sports, leadership, and society, and kind of looking at the broad spectrum of how sports, society, and leadership intersect, and all that surrounds it. And so it's a really fascinating, never-ending case study. I mean, you can open the paper every single day. Right now is an amazing time to look at how leaders in sports organizations are shaping and developing our society on a day-to-day basis with, you know, as we're talking right now, in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. So it's a fascinating subject to be a part of. And that's briefly the story of how I got into it.
Right. For me, the thing about leadership, the skill of leadership, because it definitely is a skill that you acquire and you develop and you learn, it is so transferable in all aspects of life. And you had mentioned, obviously, like for you, there's a big focus on the side of sports and athletics. But I think that's also why there a lot of the athletes who were the kind of the leaders in their sport or their team, and then when they retire, they tend to end up in almost like a leadership capacity. Sometimes it's in the media channel where they're now spokesperson hosts or whatever it is. And then there's been a few that have gone on to have very successful entrepreneurial careers and whatnot. So I guess for me, it would be like, what would be, so one of the courses you mentioned was teaching resilience. So how would you go about teaching somebody resilience? I guess where we can maybe start is, let's define what resilience is in regards to the way you teach it. And then let's maybe walk through how you would help somebody develop that skill set.
Sure. And I'll say I'm not the foremost authority on resilience and resilience training. There's some fantastic people out there that I use that just do a fantastic job of looking at it. But one of the things when you're trying to teach resilience, and one of the things is that you can teach it, and it's different at all stages of your life. And there's different things that go into it, you know, what your background was like, what your personality is like, all sorts of different things like that. But it can be taught and it can be worked on like any other skill. And it's something that's really transferable with athletics, because on a day-to-day basis, you know, you're dealing with loss, or you're dealing with, you know, not getting the playing time you want, or, you know, your girlfriend breaks up with you and you still got to go to practice in an hour. Like all these things that, you know, our guys have to go through on a day-to-day basis, and, you know, we try to help them through. And so broadly defined, it's, you know, someone's ability to bounce back from difficulty, or to persist through something that's difficult. And this is something that people have looked at for a long time, and my project and, you know, the beginnings of the class just centered around, you know, what are some of the things that you need to have in your toolkit in order to be resilient. And that's kind of how things spun from there.
What would be some of those things you would want to have in your toolkit?
Yeah. So, and you know, I wish I had my whole thesis in front of me so I could go back through, because some of it's, escaping my memory, all the finer points of it. But having a great inner circle of people that you can rely on. So having a great, your network, people that you can go to discuss stuff or talk about difficult times, that's really important to being resilient. So when you talk about like a team, having strong bonds with your coaches and your other players when you go through a hard time or whatnot, that's really one of the great factors that helps show if someone can be resilient. Having kind of an optimistic or a realistic, but with a tinge of optimism, part of your personality. So you're not always pessimistic, you don't, and you're not too optimistic, but you're kind of nicely right in the middle where you see things as they are, but you believe that things are going to work out right. Okay. Another one is having what's called an internal locus of control. So there's external locus of control and internal locus of control, not to get too into the weeds, but an external locus of control would be, you know, if a situation happens, you feel like it's outside of you, outside of your control. So you blame it on other people, you blame it on the situation or whatnot. An internal locus of control, you feel like you have the ability to change your how you view it, how the outlook might be. And so people that have more of an internal locus of control feel like they can bounce back because they can work through things. So
right.
Those are just some of the points that we discuss and that you find.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I mean, I've done, this will be 35 conversations now. And then I've read a ton of books on personal development, personal growth. And those three things you shared, though you worded them differently, if you think about the, like, if you break it down, so that first one, having that support network, that to me is like the principle of association. Surround yourself with people that want to see you succeed. They're there to support you. That's super critical in any arena if you want to be successful. Trying to be a lone wolf and being successful is almost never going to work. And that's really evident in team sports, as we both know. Mm-hmm. I played a lot of basketball and soccer and a lot of team sports. And basketball was really, like, it's really evident in basketball. Yes, LeBron James can carry a team, but he can't win championships on his own.
Mm-mm.
Right?
No.
And then what was the second point you had mentioned?
A little bit of optimism, like a right, realistic
optimism.
Yeah, yeah.
So being a realist, obviously that's good. I think to me, the way I look at that is just not being pessimistic, like not being super negative. Because
yeah.
That's not going to really get you anywhere, but maintaining more of a positive mindset, almost in a sense, like a growth mindset is a different, yep. little bit more trendy way to saying it. But the last one, the thing that popped into my head was stoicism.
Yeah.
Is like training yourself to understand that there are certain things that are out of your control and you can't do anything about it. But there is a lot that is within your control, which is typically how you react to those situations that might feel out of your control. So, which when you boil it down means you have control over everything,
yep.
right? Because you can control how you're going to react to it. So that's super interesting that, like that resilience really is like a combination of all these positive attributes that you would find in different aspects of whether it's business or philosophy or whatever it be. What would be some of the other aspects of leadership that you would be training or coaching people on, or teaching, I guess is the word you would use.
Yeah. Well, one of the things about teaching leadership, and one of the things that we focus a lot on, and I'll kind of flip back and forth between, you know, the courses I teach and then also the real world application, you know, and being a college basketball coach. But, you know, there's not one type of leader. I think a lot of people, you know, when you say, hey, what does a leader look like? It, you know, draw me a picture or something. It's somebody standing in front of a crowd and making a big speech and is this extroverted personality and whatnot. And that is true for a lot of leaders that we see in, you know, public office or social media, but there's as many different types of leaders as there are people in the world. And I think that what we do a lot of is really looking at, you know, your own personal skill set. You know, who are you as a person and as a leader? What are your skills? What are your strengths? What can you bring to the table? If you're an introvert or someone that isn't going to really stand out in front of the crowd, well, how do you lead by example? You know, can you pull someone aside in a one-on-one situation? Are you more comfortable with that? What are your stressors? What are you comfortable? What are you not comfortable? You know, there's a million things. And so much of leadership is kind of contextual too. So sometimes people are really good at being a leader, you know, in tough times or when someone needs to make a big speech or someone needs to come in a locker room and get them riled up. And sometimes people are better, you know, in practice away from the big stage and whatnot. And so we do a lot of work on figuring out who you are, what it is that you could bring to the table. And then once you get into that situation, you know, whatever the job is, whatever the situation is, you know, how can you use those specific skills that you have as a leader to add to that association?
Right. I, while you were saying that, I was like, you know what? I don't know if we've actually, the thing about leadership I find is everybody kind of has a bit of a different image or definition of it. So for you, what is, like, how would you define leadership? Do you have, is that something that you think you could define?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, being someone that's a professor of leadership, I should have a snappy, nice one-line answer for you. And, you know, ultimately, like, the goal of leadership is to try to get people to follow you for some sort of goal. You know, you want to take them from one place to the other, whether it be in a business or in a sports environment or as a band, or you want to take them someplace and then move them along, and you want to build trust along the way. And so you're trying to get people to follow you. I mean, that's really what leadership is about, is getting people to follow you, and not like in a sense of look how great I am, but just, hey, I think this is a great direction to go, and you want people to come along with you. And so there's so many ways to do that, and there's so many theories on it and whatnot, but at the base of it, it's trying to get people to pull in one direction for a common goal.
Right. Yeah. I think one of my favorite short summarized responses that I've ever heard on the definition, and it made a lot of sense, was John C. Maxwell, who writes, yep, a ton of books on and speaks about the subject all the time, is for him, he feels that leadership is influence, right? Yep. And if you can successfully lead, that means you're successfully influencing people to take actions that are in their benefit.
Yep.
I was like, when I first heard that, I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So really it's just being able to help people take that step forward that maybe they felt scared or unable to do without some sort of guidance. And then now you step up and you're the one that kind of takes them along and gets them to that destination that they ultimately want to get to. So, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say Maxwell's great. The book I think that you're talking about, that's one of the required reading books in one of my classes. The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where that comes from. And so I think I was just reading a bunch of papers where I think somebody was quoting one of those chapters. But he's one of the foremost authorities on leadership for sure.
Yeah, he's got a great story because he started, for those that don't know, he started off as a pastor. I don't know if I'm using the proper term, and then he just had a lot of success in building churches that he went to, and then through leadership, but then he wanted to transition to the business world, and he's been incredibly successful, mm-hmm, in that arena. So when I mean, obviously we both understand the value of developing leadership in ourselves. And obviously you teach, but why is it that a lot of people look at the skill set or that word of leadership, and they've got this stigma that you only learn leadership once you become a quote unquote leader, right? Like it seems super interesting that people think that you have to develop that skill set once you're in a position of leadership, whereas I'm sure you would argue that that's a skill set you want to have no matter what you consider like a title.
Sure. Yeah. And it sounds like you kind of, what you're getting at is, you know, there's like positional leadership where you just happen, yeah, to be called the manager, and so people should follow you because that's, you know, what your title is. And then there's, you know, leadership that doesn't matter on your position, you know, where you are at. Two things. One, our head coach here at Chapman has a great quote about, you know, when guys come in as freshmen in college basketball, you know, it's hard to be a leader amongst your peers. You know, when you come in as a 17, 18-year-old and there's 22, 23-year-old guys, you know, to be a leader as a freshman or even a sophomore is a very unique thing. But one of the things that we talk about is before you can become a great leader, just become a great follower. By just, it's okay if you don't have the ability to lead people at the time, but just understand how to be part of a group and how to pull in the same direction and, study and be around people that are good leaders and just be a really great follower and be a good part of that group. And then eventually throughout, your growing process, you will develop your own leadership style and you will become a leader eventually. So it's like, crawl before you walk, sort of a thing. And then, oh man, I forgot the second part. What was the original question? Sorry.
Just part of the I guess it's why is it such a valuable skill? Like,
Right.
why should everybody really work on developing their leadership?
And such a good question because though you might study or you might not always see the benefits of, I want to be a leader at my work, or I want to become the boss or the manager and whatnot. Studying leadership and the skills is only going to help you only in your personal life as well, and becoming a better father and husband and brother and whatnot, and being a better community member and growing in those ways as well. So it's really important just for your personal life too. To understand, some of the aspects of leadership, and then obviously as you grow and develop into some of these other roles, then you're just going to become a better connector of people. One of the tenets of the program that I teach in at Chapman is the difference between leadership and management, right? And so, management, though they often intersect and intertwine at a sense, you can lead from anywhere, any position. Within a society or within a company, managing is more about making sure these things get out on time and do this and do that and follow these orders or whatnot. And so there is a difference between the two, and being a leader doesn't require you to have necessarily a position of power, though it does help, and you can make greater influence when you do.
Right. And I guess maybe this is almost like a question. So I'll just kind of ask it is, do you think you can have, it's one or the other, right? Like you could be a leader without having good management skills and vice versa. You could be a good manager and have basically no leadership skills.
100%.
And I think where the true value is and where you probably see people who really rise above the crowd is if they are a strong leader and a good manager. Because being a good manager means you're kind of watching all the moving pieces and you're able to know where what needs to go and just keeping people on task almost in a sense. Whereas a leader, I feel like, especially with all the books that I've read, I feel like being a strong leader is about creating a vision and getting as many people to buy into that vision and start marching in that direction.
No, you hit it on the head. We talk about the difference between transactional leadership and transformational leadership. And so, the transactional leadership is basically, hey, I need to manage this. You need to be here at this time. You need to have your things in order, kind of managerial type of things. And it is important to have those skills. Don't get me wrong at all. Where the transformational leadership is more about inspiring something deep inside another person to lift them to another level. And the great leaders and great coaches that I've had the opportunity to be around, they have both. Like, 100% right. The head coaches for college basketball, they've got to manage budgets and recruiting and scouting and do this and go here and get the bus here and blah, blah, blah. All that sort of stuff. They have to be spot on, 100% great at that transactional stuff. And then they also have to be really good at when a kid walks into their gym and is having a terrible day to be able to kind of reach down inside and find a way to get them to have a good practice and to be, to give it their all for the team and pull in the same direction. And so it's a full day when you're doing both of those things. And I think that it's necessary at the highest levels. And you do see the highest levels leaders have both of those skills for sure.
Yeah. So something I have found whenever I start studying something and I go really deep and it's very consuming. Like I spent almost that full year studying leadership. When I started looking at the rest of the world, I started seeing examples of the things I was learning. So with you being a professor and being involved in it for as long as you've had, or as long as you've have been so far, when you are doing those other things that you do in life, so being the musician and a podcaster and just life in general, have you noticed that you kind of look at things in a bit of a different lens, of almost like through this lens of leadership and just observationally looking at people and almost like measuring their leadership ability based on how they're interacting with you or how you're observing them interact with other people? Do you ever find yourself doing that?
Yeah, I think I do that all the time. I mean, I wear a lot of different hats, like you mentioned. And so I'm hopping from a meeting with, you know, university professors to young 18 to 22 year old kids. And then I'm going to band practice and then dealing with a PR manager for a European tour. And then I'm doing this with somebody for my podcast. And in all of those scenarios, you're just trying to sort of just be a reader of people and, you know, like I said, we talked about managing other people and knowing where you fit in and knowing who should be in what role and when to step back, when to step forward. I mean, in certain roles in my life, I am the leader. Like in my band, podcast, business, professor, like I'm in charge of the class and the band and all that. College basketball, I'm the associate head coach. I'm in charge, but you know, there's a guy ahead of me, so I have to know how to manage that role as well as some of those other things. So it's a constant process of just, you know, figuring out where you fit in and then like you mentioned too, how other people fit in. You definitely see it as you grow.
Yeah. I love the fact that you're teaching young men to be leaders, because I look back at myself at that age and I remember having a teacher almost like she pulled me aside and she's like, you're going to be a great leader one day. And I was just kind of like, I didn't really understand what she meant. But I kind of also took that and thought that because she said that, it's like, I should get like that respect right away. And I don't know, I was just very naive at that age.
Yeah.
But I think it's so healthy that there's courses out there that teach people, young people, what leadership is and to start developing that skill at a young age, because it is such a valuable skill set. Is the program, I guess I'm trying to understand, what kind of kids are you seeing come into that program? Is it primarily through the athletics program or is it just a wide variety of kids that come into it?
Yes, so Chapman University is, for those that are listening that, you know, don't know much about Chapman, which is fine. Chapman is we're pretty high academic university, you know, kind of the 4.0s, 1350 and up SAT kind of kids, like really great kids that we deal with, 8,000 undergrads, 12,000 for the full school. So it's a good mid-sized university out here in Southern California, out by UCLA, USC, that sort of thing. So the program that I'm in, it's for all students. So I do have some athletes in some of my classes, just because they're interested in the subject matter, but it's open to any and all students. And so I do see, it's a minor. So there's a master's program and a minor program. So a lot of students take it, you know, they have their regular, bachelor's degree is going to be in, and they take the minor to kind of supplement it. And so I see a lot of business majors take my classes and, they enjoy it just for, you know, a way to kind of boost their business degree, to have some leadership work as well. And then, obviously there's a lot of kids from other programs that just are interested in sports or whatnot, that take it as well.
Mm. Yeah. I think I would have been attracted to that if that was an option to me, because I took, when I was in junior high, I took, the class was called Enterprise and Innovation. Uh-huh. And what sold me on it was part of the course and how we were going to be graded was to launch a business. So come up with a business plan, launch a business, run it within the school for a little bit. And then they would grade us on not like the profits of the business, but just like how successfully we rolled it out and did we have any issues and whatnot. So I think I would have probably have been pretty attracted to a leadership type course, as long as it was, I guess, in a sense, pitched to me the right way. I think I would have been attracted to that. So it makes sense that a lot of business majors are going.
Yeah, I see a lot. What's fun is it's kind of all over the map, to be honest. And I always say this, and I run the class so that whether you love sports or hate sports, you're going to get something out of it. And I actually really enjoy when I have some people take the class that, you know, didn't play sports growing up or don't really like sports, but just are taking it because they just were sort of interested or it fit their schedule, whatever it is, because I like having that different point of view. And it's set up so we don't just sit around and talk about the Lakers, Clippers score or something like that. It's, you know, we look at things like race and social class and the media and how it fits within the realm of things. So I really enjoy teaching it, and I get a lot out of it. I hope the kids do too. I'm assuming they get something.
I would assume so. If not, hopefully maybe in a few years they'll look back at moment and go, oh, that's where I learned that.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So outside of that, obviously you're quite active with a lot of other things. I'd love to chat a little bit about the podcast that you do.
Yeah.
It, from what I saw, it looks like you bring on kind of the same idea, a pretty wide variety of people from the world of athletics and from business.
Yeah. Yeah. So the podcast was something I started a couple years ago. It's called Beautiful Work Podcast. And I'm involved in, like I said, a lot of different things. And so I'm a huge podcast fan. I love listening to podcasts. I think it's a fantastic medium, way to learn and kind of grow your knowledge base by listening to great conversations with people. So I was really into podcasts and still am. From my years in the music industry, just have worked with so many unbelievable musicians and, you know, have access to a phone call, can call some really great people. I'm, you know, university professor and get to rub elbows with some of the greatest minds, you know, on the West Coast for all different types of things. And then obviously the basketball world and then the business world. So I just, a few years ago decided to start reaching out to some of my personal contacts and see if they wanted to have conversations like this. And we kind of dive into the nuts and bolts of what they do and kind of the things that they've done in their career. And I love doing it. It's been a lot of fun. We're on getting ready to release episodes. We're kind of like right around you, 34, 35, 36, coming up here in the upcoming weeks. And so the last guy I had on was Daron Acemoglu, who is one of the world's leading economists from MIT. And I prepared like heck for that conversation because he's so much smarter than me. I was just trying to make it seem like I could be somewhat in the same room with him. But but I love doing it, and I get a chance to learn so much about other people's paths and careers and leadership styles through that podcast. And so it's just something I like to try to share, kind of like what you're doing.
Yeah, I am such a huge fan of the podcasting platform. I was mainly a huge fan from the consumption side of it, obviously. And then I tried a podcast with a couple friends and we were on a pretty good rhythm, and then just life happened. And
sure,
it's a lot more difficult to organize three people every week than it is obviously like yourself and a guest, and that's it. And so when I finally decided, you know what, why haven't I done my own thing? The biggest thing that I've learned is, and you kind of touched on it, is you just start connecting with so many great people. It's absolutely incredible. And all you're doing is just asking for a conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And, for me, the area in which I'm focusing on is like business development or, personal growth, business growth, coaching, mentoring, that kind of thing. And why I chose that area was just because that's an area that I enjoyed and I was very passionate about. It's the bulk of the books that I read. So it's just kind of like, how can I do more of this, right? And I think my advice to anybody out there, especially with what we're going through right now, by the time this releases, hopefully we've gone beyond it and we're all, everybody's okay. But video conferencing and calls like this are becoming more and more popular just out of necessity. Mm-hmm. All these people that have these passion about, it doesn't even matter what you're passionate about. Maybe you're passionate about crochet or whatever, start a podcast on it and then interview people that are in that space and just talk about crochet. And, mm-hmm. but then all of a sudden like your network starts growing and it's just such a cool side effect that I was not even considering when I first started. And it sounds like you kind of had a similar experience. It's like you're just connecting with all these amazing people.
100%. And, yeah, you look back and I'm sure you're doing the same thing. You look back at the people that you've had on so far and are going to have on, and to say that you would get a chance to have an hour conversation with a lot of these people and to learn and have their time is pretty cool. And yeah, to have them in your network, you know, going forward and to have them, you know, be someone that you can reach out to and who knows what will develop. It's just sort of like that compounding interest effect of, you know, building that group of people that you kind of can call mentors or friends.
Yeah. I love it. Especially the audience that I'm kind of building this for, entrepreneurial type people, I would literally say everybody should start a podcast. And a weekly schedule, I would say, is kind of at minimum is what you would want to do. I personally feel, I guess you could always go less frequent than that. But if you're already going to be having conversations with people, why not record them and turn them into something of value for other people that would love to be a fly on the wall listening in on that conversation, right? That's why I think I loved podcasts like Tim Ferriss, Jordan Harbinger. Like, they get these massive celebrity type people on their podcasts because of the clout and what the work they've put in. And then I get to sit there and listen to these amazing people chat for an hour, 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours, depending on whose podcast you're listening to. Yeah. But like, your average person will never get that opportunity except through a podcast. And I think that's why it's such a cool platform.
100%. I think too, it's, you know, when I listen to Tim Ferriss talk to, you know, someone that's been, you know, wildly successful in some realm, you know, there's a certain amount of similarity that sometimes I think you hear when you listen to somebody talk that's very successful and you hear their backstory and you hear the ups and downs they went through in these conversations. And it's like, man, you know, we're kind of all in the same thing. Everybody's figuring out, and you know, obviously they have some sort of skill or desire or drive that's led them to their success, no doubt, but they've had the same struggles and the same ups and downs that so many of us have had. And it's kind of nice to think, okay, well, you know, you just got to keep plugging away. And they have these kind of nuggets of wisdom that I always like to listen to. And it kind of humanizes them a little bit, because if you just read an article about them, it's like, man, there's crazy successful people. They must have something totally different than the rest of us. And maybe some of them do, but for the most part, it's like, hey, just people that love what they do and did a great job at it and built it, developed it. And, you know, eventually things went their way, which is really fun to listen to.
Yeah. It's, I agree. That is one of the reasons why I enjoy those types of conversations. Cause when they share that personal journey of where they started and all of the trials and tribulations they went through. And then in a lot of cases, I look at my own life and I go like, wow, I've not gone through near as many challenges as them. And it's kind of like, I really don't have an excuse. So that was a big part of the motivation, is like, just start it and keep plugging away at it. Cause you never know where it's going to take you.
Yeah.
And or through these relationships, especially now through these relationships that I've created and earned, you don't know what kind of lifelong relationships you could be forming. And it started with a you know, 60 minute conversation over Zoom.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So it's a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it a lot. So tell me, let's go into the band. I want to hear a little bit of that lifestyle.
For sure.
It's so crazy. Like, you live all these
different
types of lifestyle. So tell me a little bit about your musical career.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. Last year I released my fifth record. It's called Grandeur, and had a really great year with it. I was lucky to have it end up on multiple end of the year 2019 best singer-songwriter or folk pop lists, especially over in Europe. Had one of the songs off the record end up as one of the top songs of the year over there as well. And so it was a fun year. I toured Europe for about a month with it. I've got a full band here in Orange County, and so it's been a great other career with my basketball. So, you know, I coach from, you know, September through March, or whenever we end up losing our last game or losing the playoffs or win the playoffs, hopefully. And then, you know, spring and summer come, and that's when I hit the road with the band and do a lot of stuff like that. And so I've got another record coming out here in a few months, a live album from one of our shows last year. And it's been about 9-10 years in. So I started, my first record came out in 2008, and I've just kind of slowly kept building. And it seems like it's like a totally different thing than coaching and teaching. But they all kind of just roll into one for me. So it's a joy and a part of my life that I thoroughly love doing, and spend, you know, too many 2 a.m. nights writing songs and whatnot than I probably should. But it's just part of the creative process that I just thoroughly enjoy.
Yeah. I think we talked about this on our first call, but you don't have kids yet, do you?
I do not. I was gonna say
there's no way you'd be staying up until 2 a.m. if you had a young one like I've got right now.
Or maybe I would be, but I wouldn't be writing songs. It'd be for different
things. Yeah. But no, that's awesome. It's cool, because what I saw in our initial conversation is obviously you're doing a lot of things, but you make it work. Whereas a lot of people look at that one thing they have, so their day job, and they feel almost like that's all I can do, right?
Sure.
Like I can't do anymore. And they have these passions that they kind of throw to the wayside, or they just, it, like, they grow apart from it, and then all of a sudden there's like resentment. But like you're living what seems from the outside like a very joyful life, because you're doing all these things that you're passionate about, and you're making time for it, and that's awesome, right? Like, that was another reason why I wanted to have you on, was because that's such a good example that you can do more with your time. It's just about prioritization.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for saying that. And I am really lucky to do all the things that I do. I mean, I'm passionate about coaching, teaching, and leadership, and being around that. And I'm really passionate about music and whatnot. I'm getting a chance to do both things, which is really cool. But it's not without struggle, and it's not without having to, over the years, have developed a personal resilience to ups and downs, because, you know, the world of coaching and the world of music are two volatile, difficult professions to be in, to make a living and to keep persisting through. And, you know, as I've gotten older, I've gotten better and better, I think, at setting aside time and having a schedule and making sure I, you know, just show up to, you know, pick up the guitar for half an hour if I have to get up a little bit earlier, to give it, you know, the time that it needs, and then go on with my day. But I'm really lucky, and they all kind of just weave in and out for me. I'm looking, I have my personal notebook right here, and It's like one page has basketball plays, and then it's got recruiting notes, and then it's got notes from my class on leadership, and then underneath it are three lyrics that I was working on. And like, it just all kind of circles into one. And I'm like, I try to have separate notebooks, but it's just not how my brain works. It just all kind of flows. So it is what
That's
it is.
awesome. I feel like I'm kind of the same way in that, like, I've got a lot of like little projects going, the podcast being like the main one, but I don't know if this is maybe the same with you, but like, I find that I struggle with really focusing on one thing for an extended period of time. I can sometimes once I really get in the flow and in the groove, but I'll do, especially because there's a lot of types of work right now anyways that I have to do that is pretty tedious and not the most stimulating. So it's like chip away at that, and then it's like, I'm bored. And then I flip over to a different project, work on that for a little bit. And like, I know I'm guilty of the shiny object syndrome, but I feel like there's a way to almost like leverage that and not like not fight it so much, though I know focus time is really important. If I keep fighting this tendency that I have of wanting to like, oh, try this, try that, try that, I almost like mentally exhaust myself by like having to fight it. So I'm trying this new approach of almost like embracing it and seeing how that goes. I'll let you know in a year or so if it works out. But
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will.
Well, that's been a really great conversation, Dan. We've obviously covered a lot of different things, and I always like to wrap up the episodes asking the guests, you know, coming out of this conversation, which we did talk a lot about just a little bit of everything, what would be that one thing you would suggest that they take action on to level up in maybe the area of leadership?
So I'm going to give you like a cheat one, and then I'm going to give you my real one real fast, because I think that the basis of leadership across everything, I don't think that much gets done as far as leading people if you don't develop trust first. I think that that's like the absolute baseline. You have to always be working on developing trust with people that you're attempting to lead. And so I think that's just at the base of everything. But I'd like to add a second one that I think is maybe a little bit more, it makes sense with the times right now. And that's as a leader having improvisation skills, like being able to ad adjust and adapt to the current situations. And I think right now, as we're talking in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, so many people and their businesses and their whole lives have been turned around because of this, and they've had to adapt. I know I certainly have, and I'm lucky at this point to still be doing what it is that I'm doing. But I think that learning to think on your feet, to improvise. You know, we do an improv. It's a practice, an improv practice in our class, and it's called Yes And. And so basically, I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's like, you know, anytime somebody says something, you got to say yes and, you keep going, you keep going. And it's kind of a fun, silly game, but I find myself as a leader all the time reverting back to that, where, you know, you might not like the outcome of the game. We might have lost the game, but you just accept it, and then what? And then you move on. You know, this is the new reality that we're in right now with the COVID-19. I don't like it. There's not everything that's great about it, but you know what? Like, how do we improvise and innovate and maybe do some new things and learn some new skills? And so I think that's really important. I constantly remind myself that, constantly try to work at that and all the things that I do. And it's something we talk about a lot with both the players at Chapman and as well as the people that are in my classes.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice. The skill to be able to adapt and change is, I think, going to become a more an even more valuable skill as time goes on. So, yeah, great advice.
100%. Yeah.
So, if people wanted to reach out, connect with you, where's the best place for them to do that?
Yeah, so I would just direct them to my website, which is dankrikorian.com, DanKrikorian.com. And it has all the All the things that I do are on the website. Beautifulworkpodcast.com takes you to the same place. But I would suggest reaching out to me there, and then all of my social media sites and all that are from that website.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll make sure that's all in the show notes. Well, Dan, that was a lot of fun. I really appreciate the conversation. Definitely looking forward to some future conversations, because there's a lot of similarities and commonalities here. So yeah, definitely looking forward to those future chats.
100%. Thanks so much for having me. This was a great conversation.
Thanks, Dan. Take care.
All right.
Thanks for listening to the Get Coach podcast. If you're looking for more information, you can head over to our website, which is getcoachedpodcast.com. You'll find the show notes for this and every other episode there. And if getting actionable advice every week from professional coaches is something you want more of, then make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes.